Things was for true morning would come, and color to pages had new printed seasons gone. The opposite side, Jenny, Jenny, you don't know. The nights are high, below a second story low, to whistle you down. Oh, the man is 80 degrees of time is in my eyes. Got a silver car, let's be shy for hours. Why you sweet?
Respect and understanding is a must. But sister. I saw you making love. I'm gonna get my pistol. Telepathies, gonna be the death of me. Telepathies, gonna be the death of me. Telepathies, gonna be the death of me. Telepathies, gonna be the death of me.
Telepathy. A very clever song by Lena Lovitch, a name you probably haven't heard for a while. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and the name of the show is Heresy. And I'm here the middle Sundays, if you can get this straight. It took me a while. The middle Sundays of the month, not the first and not the last. That means, ergo, that I have either two shows when the month has four Sundays in it, or I have three shows when the month has five Sundays in it. This month has four Sundays, therefore, I have two shows. So now you know as much as I do. For the past two shows, the two shows I did in July, I decided at the very last moment, which is why it's not folioed, I decided at the last moment to make a theme summer, as some of our producers have done. I'm speaking specifically of Simon Lokley, who does a show called As I Please on Saturday mornings at 7 to 8:30. And he has decided to go to hell this summer by reading Dante's Inferno and by, lecturing on the piece by Dante Alighieri before he reads. And he's going to be reading the entire hell version, portion of his Divine Comedy. And he's been doing that since, I think, the beginning of July. So I decided, copycat that I am, that I had enough material on fairy tales, folk tales, whatever. I don't like to call them fairy tales because it scares some people off. They go, oh my God, I'm going to have to sit and listen to the Three Little Pigs told in some sing-song voice. First of all, I don't tell my stories that way, and second of all, those aren't the stories that I read. This morning, I have a pair of stories to read about Snow White. One of them makes her out to be a vampire. One of them makes her out to be a socialist. You decide which is the better treatment for Snow White. They're two wonderful stories. One is from a book called Red as Blood, and the story is also called Red as Blood. And it's by Tanith Lee, who writes science fiction, horror, sword and sorcery, fantasy, and all that. I don't think she writes any hard science fiction. The other story is written by the Merseyside... The Merseyside Fairy Story Collective. Merseyside is obviously in England. The Mersey is the famous river that flows through or around Liverpool. And they wrote this story collectively. And this, of course, is the one picturing Snow White as the socialist. It's a fine and funny story. The other story I have as a wild card story, which I will read first, is from an absolutely beautiful new book by Margaret Mahy, M-A-H-Y. It's called The Door in the Air. And I read, the story I'm going to be reading is The Magician in the Tower. Now this book, since I happen to be fascinated by book design, the inside design of a book and the type and all that stuff that normally people don't see when they read. They just know that, oh, this looks good, and they don't know why. This book is beautifully put together. It is published by Delacorte Press. I found it at the Coliseum Bookstore on 57th and 7th or Broadway, somewhere around there. The place that stays open late. The big bookstore that stays open late. It's a wonderful store. And I read about the book in the New York Times Sunday Book Review. And because of some quotes that they took from this very story, The Magician in the Tower, I decided I had to have this book. She's an Australian writer, and she is just a master of language, and I'm going to be very, very happy to read this story. I wish I had written it. It's very lovely. So we heard, let me announce my wonderful records before I go into this. As I said, Lena Lovitch doing Telepathy. And before that, 10,000 Maniacs, starring Natalie Merchant, doing Back of the Moon. And we first heard after I'm Gonna Stand, from the Memory Metropolis album, Clara Monshine doing High Moon Enters Heaven. And those are the first three songs you heard. One announcement, let me get it out of the way, and I'll also say it at the end of the show. My boss at the place where I work, her name is Paula Roth, she will be on WBAI on Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock from 7 to 9, also, I think from 7 to 8, with Laura Seidel. She will be here by phone. Not Laura Seidel, but my boss. My boss will be still stumbling around in her home. And they will be discussing, I imagine, since this is our lot in life and our reason for being and our reason for getting paid, they will be discussing alcohol and drug abuse and women. Not necessarily the problems that women are having with the criminalization of taking alcohol and drugs while you're pregnant. There's a lot of controversy going on about that, and every state seems to be doing either very nasty things or protesting against them as far as convicting women of passing drugs or soliciting passing drugs to a minor, like selling drugs to your fetus or something. It's very odd. But anyway, she will be on Tuesday morning, and it should be an interesting talk because she's an interesting lady, and Laura Seidel is an interesting producer. So if you're up and if you're listening, I just thought to mention that. And let me, without too much further ado, go to reading. The Door in the Air, as I say, is a book of collected stories by Margaret Mahey, M-A-H-Y. And this one is entitled The Magician in the Tower. On the edge of the wood, in the soft and flickering shadows of the leaves, Matilda laughed and sighed as she said goodbye to her lover. "We'll dream of each other tonight," she told him. "And meet again tomorrow," he said, "but don't be late." "Never, never, never," cried Matilda, laughing. They kissed each other. He went his way and she went hers. Because she was in love, Matilda felt herself powerful and happy, able to change the world with her smallest wish. So it gave her no surprise to come upon flowers, clumps of primroses and a cloud of forget-me-nots breaking up under the shadows of a bare tree. She thought that by being so happy, she had invented a new season, a Matilda season, fitting in somewhere between winter and spring, sharing a bit of both, but different from either. The primroses and forget-me-nots were hers because, by being happy, she had made the air warm and the ground soft for them. So she picked herself a bunch of flowers, wrapped their stems in a dock leaf, and went on her way home. However, to get home, she had to pass the magician's tower. There had always been a magician in the tower. The people in the town said, "The tower was there before our houses, before our village, and the magician has always lived in it. He must be an old cobwebby fellow by now. Very, very old. Their faces grew still for a moment as they thought just how old the magician must be. His tower was covered with 1,000 years of climbing roses and ivy. Long windows, slots of darkness or light, showed through the thorns and leaves high on the wall. Sometimes at night, these windows seemed to reflect sunlight from within, sometimes at midday. Looking upward and inward, one could see what looked like stars. Sometimes the magician's shadow flickered like a mad giant, stretching out over fields and streams toward the hills, glimpsed for a moment and vanishing again. The magician himself was never seen, and the door of his tower was never open. However, tonight, as Matilda went by, she saw that her own enchanted Matilda season had done more than open the primroses and forget-me-nots early, for the door of the magician's tower was open too. For a moment, she stood staring. Walking away from a door open for the very first time ever seemed like turning your back on an invitation someone was offering you. From where she stood, she could see the first two steps of a stair. Somewhere up the stair must be the magician himself, and Matilda suddenly felt sorry for him, an old man with only his mysteriousness to keep him company. Feeling brave because she was in love and had invented a special new season, Matilda thought she might go up that staircase and give the magician her flowers. They would be a message of kindness from the world outside the tower, where enchantment came about without the help of wizards and magicians. At the doorway, she looked up and, under the dark, straggling fringe of leaves that covered the lintel, she could see letters cut into the stone, cut so deeply that, though worn with age, they were still clear. "The Tower of Changes," they said. But Matilda thought they must be wrong, for the tower was the most unchanged and unchanging thing she could imagine. She stepped in through the open door. Suppose it shut behind her. But it didn't. She could still look back to the winter fields and the red western winter sun. On the wall beside the third step was a picture in a dark frame of a smiling boy standing under an apple tree. Over his shoulder you could see a whole world. Oceans and islands, hills, forests, and cities. He was dressed in green with red curls falling to his collar and dark eyes that looked straight into Matilda's blue ones, as if he were warning her of something and promising her another thing at one and the same time. Still and stiff in his paint, he held out towards her a bunch of primroses and forget-me-nots that seemed a reflection of her own. And his smile, like his eyes, promised and warned her. With astonishment, Matilda saw that though he was still, the landscape behind him was continually changing. A sun, as red as the sun outside the tower, rose up beyond the hills, climbed the blue air, and then turned into an apple under the apple tree. A long silver fish leaped from a stream that flowed past the boy's feet, but instead of falling back into the water, it flew on up into the sky and became a new moon. Tiny flowers opened in the grass, put out wings and changed to butterflies. A white flower with a golden heart and streaks of scarlet on its lower petals fell from a bush, and then a little white serpent with scarlet eyes and a gold key in his mouth slid off into the grass. Further back, beyond boy and tree and stream and grass, the world of the picture moved and changed. Cities fell into ruin and were built again. Waterfalls hesitated and then tumbled upwards. Islands in the distant sea stretched themselves out into spiky green dragons and flew off into the stormy west. Among the flying up and the tumbling down, the boy held out his flowers to Matilda as if offering to exchange them for those she held in her own hand. Matilda smiled back at him and began to climb the stairs. Upwards and upwards again they led her, and at each turn in the spiral there hung a picture. Strange faces passed before her eyes, one face as dark as a storm, eyes flashing lightning under thundering waves of black hair, one as clear as water, eyes like blue pools, hair as green as watercress. A third was a golden mask with holes for eyes, stalks of corn lying lightly between its smiling lips, faces of bone, of feathers, of carved wood, an accidental face made of berries, stems, and leaves that vanished when you looked at it directly. All these painted people watched Matilda climb the staircase, and she, in turn, looked up at them through the friendly, careless tangle of her brown hair, holding the bunch of flowers in her scratched, strong little hands. At last the stair ended, though the room at the top was more of a cave than a room, its walls of rough, unpolished rock shining with long streaks of unknown minerals. A fire burned against the cave wall, and Matilda's step on the stair echoed as if she had suddenly come into a space much greater than any space even the tower could hold. The magician stood before her, painting a picture by the light of many candles crowded together onto rocks and ledges. His long red and gray hair fell down his back almost to his waist. He turned and looked at her when he heard her step. He was not old, but like Matilda, he had made a season of his own around him, and it was colder and darker.